Ladies and gentlemen, so it's a great pleasure for me to be here, and I have to say many thanks to Fields and for the organizers for the generous help, for traveling here and presenting a lecture and traveling back to home. So I think, and on the behalf of all the participants, because I'm being the last speaker, we have to say many, many thanks for the organizers who are not here also. For organizing this is very nice, very fruitful seminar and workshop, and it was very fantastic. So many thanks for the fears. And at the end of the talk, I will say many thanks to for your attention, but be quiet, it takes some time. So the very first case that I meet this topic I'm talking about was a chemical reaction, and if you consider a very simple chemical reaction or a much complicated one, if you consider only the mass balance, then it is clearly a linear equation, linear combination of the molecules you have, and the sum of the atoms and the species must be zero. And the hardest point is that you have to deal with the minimal reactions. So, for example, in this example, you have four molecules, but you can drop many other molecules in the tube, and you see certainly that the other molecules don't interest you. So we are interested in minimal reactions. None of the molecules listed here can be omitted, and of course this can be extended. It is interest for the chemist and not for the mathematician, that for, we can deal with ions, electrons, atomic pair species, and so on and so on. The second example is much is one step further in the hierarchy, that chemists say that if you mix something in the tube, it is not only a single reaction, but it's a sequence of reactions, one reaction another after another, and of course you may list a lot of reactions, but none of them, all the reactions can part in a mechanism. So in this example, number three could be omitted. We don't need this mechanism, and we can go much quicker for the resulted one, X4, and again we are interested in minimal mechanism. So as few reaction we have to deal with, as few can make linear combination like zero. And yes, it could be much harder than sometimes the chemist prescribe for you, for the mathematician or for the tube, that what are the input molecules, the input species, and they are one, two, and with some output materials to make something materials, but it is their problem. The third example we can use, it is not so important in physics, but for students it's very good dimension analysis when we have an equality and we are not sure that the equality is good or not. Like for example here, this is one example for viscosity and tube diameter, I'm not so expert in it, or the Newton law, F equals to m times acceleration, then you can look for the measure quantities, the dimensions, and of course in each equality then you have to reach the same number of measures, the same quantities in both sides, and of course you can correspond the vector to each physical quantity, and this is multiplication, take a logarithm, and everything is a linear combination again. And the very last or the very first example, it covers all the previous ones, that if you have a homogeneous linear equation, it may turn out that it has a lot of solutions, and again it is very useful to find all the minimal solution. This minimal solution, like a basis in a linear space, we can generate all the other solutions. And it was dealt with, dealt in 67 by Árpád Pető, and he showed me this problem, and it was the starting point of this. Sorry? Yes, in chemistry and in physics we are interested in integer solutions, but in the investigation it wasn't a problem. So it didn't cause any difference, integer or non-integer parts. But you are right, it could be minimal support. Yes. So, yes, in the next definition we can clear this problem that we are a lot of, we are given a set of vectors, and this set of vectors is good for us in both examples if this is minimal dependent. And the minimal dependent sets we call algebraic simplex, because simplexes are very often used in other literature. So we call this set algebraic simplex. So this is minimal dependent, and I'm sorry, I repeated it in two other ways to learn much easier. So it is, S is dependent, but if you omit any of the elements of it, so it is a clear proper subset of it, then the resulting set is independent. Or, in other words, it has this linear combination resulting zero is not unique, but all of the coefficients are non-zero. So it is a very important property of simplexes. So we are looking for simplexes, algebraic simplexes, and these are good for our solution, either reactions or mechanisms or other applications. So on the top of the slide, I just repeated the definition not to forget for myself or for you. And the very first task for us was to create an algorithm for generating all simplexes. So, for example, for a chemist, he has a lot of molecules, a lot of vectors, and we have to choose all the minimal simplexes, all the minimal reactions. So the edge, the big set of vectors is an input, and we have to list all the subsets of it, which are simplexes, which are minimal dependent sets in the n-dimensional space. So always I denote by n the dimension of the space. I put here a reminder for me. And it was a very easy task. So it's only 10 or 40 lines of source code, so it is not so complicated polynomial algorithm, but so it was very easy for me. The first one is a real program, and the second one, I just overwrote this program, but nothing new, and the chemists were very happy for it. This is a very simple example that I have only six species, and I listed, and they were happy. Yes, in other applications, we have... yes, but we didn't have to investigate all the subsets. This is just a back and forth algorithm. So if the set I'm dealing with is independent, I just add some next vector for it. And if I enlarge the set and it is not only dependent, but it is not a simplex, and I have to remove one element, so it yes. It is not so complicated, but I had to choose which one is in and which other vector is out, but finally it is polynomial in the output. And chemists were very keen on this argument. I listed them thousands of output, not only 70, but thousands, and they manually pulled out which is not real, which has not reality in the nature, because in the nature they have to consider the temperature or the other properties of the element. So this is only a first step or the zero step to select the possible algorithm, the possible mechanism. Okay, so, on the top again, the definition is repeated, not to forget it. And our second task was a little bit harder, that you know only the number of the input vectors, and please give bounds, upper bound and lower bounds, how many simplexes could be found in this set. So H is a big set, and of course, the number of simplexes, how many simplexes you can find in this set, it depends on the structure of the A. Sorry? No, you don't have effect on the structure of edge. So edge, you know only the number of the edge, and it could have a different structures, and upon the structures of it, the number of simplexes can be smaller or higher. So, but you have to count in some cases. So, for example, this is edge, a lot of vectors here, and H may contain small simplexes considering containing two elements. There could be, let us say, five element simplexes on it, in it, or it may contain a 19 element which form a simplex. And the hard thing is that H can contain different size, simplexes of different size. And of course, the number of total simplexes, all the simplexes, can be larger or smaller, it depends on the structure. And the task is to investigate the structure of edge, which may contain many simplexes or small simplexes. For example, if you have two parallel vectors, it forms a two-element simplex, which can be a three-element simplex. Three-element simplex can be that if you have two vectors, not parallel, but the third one is in its plane, spent plane. And so we have the input M, the number of vectors, only and nothing else, and M is the dimension, because the problem slightly differs in two dimensions, three dimensions, and the others. And we use this simple notation that simp of H counts the total numbers, two elements, three elements, and all the others. So in very early with Claude Laflamme in Calgary, we could found some theorems. The first theorem is that the number of simplexes not bigger than M choose M plus one, and it is the upper bound that this is the maximal number of simplexes. Yes, not so trivial, but it follows from Sperner's theorem, because Sperner's theorem says that if you have subsets, S subsets of H, and the sizes of simplexes at most n plus 1, because n is the dimension of the space, and yes, this is the largest, this can be the largest simplex. And Sperner's theorem says only that this is the upper bound. And yes, Sperner's theorem says that equality holds if and only if then all the subsets of this size are included in the edge and nothing else. But it cannot be derived easily for the simplexes, because if I know that every subset of edge which has exactly this size is a simplex, okay, but what is the structure of edge? And it doesn't follow from Sperner's theorem, but it's a very simple proof that simp edge is maximal, so equality holds here, if and only if every n element forms a base in edge. In other words, n element, every element is independent. So it can be achieved in many ways, so it is very easy. And the next theorem is a lower bound. We have a lower bound of so, and it is much smaller. It's about m square in magnify. And we also describe the minimal structure. H has minimal number of simplexes only in the following way, that all the elements are parallel to a base of the subset. So if, for example, if here you are in R to N, then all the elements of H must be parallel to one of the vectors, and we have distributed all the elements of H almost equally into this. So each size plus minus one must contain the same many numbers. Yes, I'm sorry, this formula is not so exact. This formula is applicated only when M can be divided by N. So each size, each class contains the same many numbers. So I have to put here a more exact formula. If M is N times N plus B, and B is the remainder, so B is less than A, then the number of simplexes in this way. So in this way, we have only two element simplexes, only parallel vectors form a simplex, because if you choose more element, that it cannot be form a simplex. Then the simplexes, number of simplexes is B times A plus 1 over 2 plus minus 9, the remainder smaller classes times A over 2. But in case B is 0, then we get this simplified formula. Okay, so these two theorems were very easy, because in some lines to prove, we just put vectors from one position to another position to enlarge the number of the simplexes or to decrease the number of the simplexes. And the open question is, and it is still open, I'm sorry, or it is good news for you for making research, that if you exclude parallel elements, of course we must have much more number of simplexes. We cannot achieve this very low bound, but exactly what. And we made a general conjecture in 1998 with a student of Claude Laflamme and Laflamme. And but please don't read this slide very carefully, because it's too high, and I will explain it later. So it's a very natural thing to reduce the dimension if you don't have parallel vectors. I didn't draw in the slide, but don't forget, please, that from this point we don't have parallel vectors. So a vector can be changed with any scalar product of it. And for example, if you are in R3, we have only three number of atoms in each molecule. Then we can choose a plane, a two-dimensional plane in the three dimension, which is not parallel each of the to each of the vector, and we get the intersection in two. So two dimension, it's only the plane paper. And what is the correspondence between simplexes? If we don't have parallel vectors, and if we are in R3, then we can have only two types of simplexes. We can have three element simplexes, and it is that three vectors are in the same plane. They span a two-dimensional plane, and the intersection, these two planes, is a line. So in the elementary problem, we have two, we have three points, collinear, and these represent the three-element simplex. And what about four-element simplexes? Four-element simplexes in three dimension, it's very easy to have four vectors, which none of three of them is parallel. So it means that we have, for example, here, four points which are not collinear, each of them. So it is a very elementary question. I just repeated here that in two dimension, this is the intersection. We have two types of simplexes, and to be very precise, we call these simplexes affine simplexes. And this is a very elementary question: what is the minimal number? We have a longer paper. We have this out with Claude Laflamme. It's about 10 pages, and we just moved the vectors from other to other to achieve smaller and smaller number of simplexes. And at the end, we proved that for m larger than 8, we have only one possible situation structure of edge containing the minimal number of simplexes, that three vectors form a span two-dimensional plane, and all the others are lying on another two-dimensional plane, and the number of simplexes is circa m cube in the quantity for some constant, and this lower bound is sharp, and this is the only unique construction. So we can go further for higher dimension. I don't repeat the thing again that the original spaces are four, and we intersect with a three-dimensional subspace which is not parallel to each of the vectors, and we got a three-dimensional model of the original problem. And the three-dimensional case, we have three elements vectors, or the trace of the three element simplexes, it is a 3-point collinear or 4-point coplanar lying on the same plane, but none of three of them collinear, and 5-point in very general case, none of the above. And it is a still elementary question. I wanted to pose for secondary students, but I was afraid this is too hard and we have to wait more than 10 years. My son got to the university and he had us. So it is mainly the result of my son and myself that for arch R3, so four dimension, I'm sorry, this is four, yes. The unique structure of edge which contains the minimal number of simplexes, it is two skate or detour line. I don't know which terminology you use it. So, and half of the points is lying in one line and half of the points lying on the other line. And these two results, the previous one in R3 and this one in R4, can be fitted in the general conjecture. So this general conjecture, which is very old, it's more than 10 years, is justificated for three dimension and four dimension, and I think you can help for us for justifying for the other cases. I'm not sure. The previous result, which was done by my son, and it's more than 15 pages, and we are still moving vectors or points from other position, but it is so cumbersome, and we have a lot of cases, subcases, subcases, and we use computers because, let me go back for a moment, this result is valid only if you have more than 24 points. So below, we investigated by computer the whole case. I think 1 week on the department. I went on and all the computers were running on the department. So the interesting thing is that the conjecture differs from if the dimension is even, or in the next slide I tell you if the dimension is odd. So for even dimension, it is said in letters, but I think the pictures are more easier to understand. So we have two vectors spanning a subspace of two dimension, two other vectors spanning. So these even many base vectors we match in pairs, and all the other elements of the edge, because edge can be as large as possible, we put here in these two dimension subspaces equivalently. And the case for dimension odd, the latest one, yes, you are right, we have an extra base vector, because we have all dimension, it is it corresponds to the last vector, but here you are only three vectors and no more. And all the other vectors, so this is surely three vectors, and all the other vectors of H are distributed in the other spaces. So, I don't know. I think Loughnan told me that this conscious server made by Meng computer, I don't know the exact details, but he made a lot of computer runs, and finally we got this conjecture. And because myself is a mathematician, I turned to Professor Dosha, and he's an expert on Metroid, and we investigated some related questions in in Metroid, that if you have a Metroid of size M, and Metroid is rank N, that how many cycles and bases can be contained, maximal and minimal, so it is closely related to this question. And two theorems on the maximality number of circuits and bases, and these results correspond to the older one for R to N, but not the same. And on the minimality, we achieve again two theorems, so we have a pattern of theorems on this topic. And if you have minimal number of cycles or bases, and in all cases we could reveal the structure, the unique structure of the set or of the Metroid for having the extreme configuration. So I think it's interesting that in these questions the answer is unique. We do have only unique external configuration. It is not all the case in Hungary. So thanks for your attention. Thank you very much. Yes, I think we didn't choose the base, but yes. Yes, so the argument and the proof are very similar to the other one. We just have to, but the results are not the same exactly, so that's why we have to be, yes, you are right. So the main ideas of the proofs were the same, but we have to be careful in some cases. So that's why I turned to Professor Dosha. Yes. Fortunately, he also works at the Pono University, Hungary. Yes. So, thanks for the organizer for this nice conference.
I guess we should thank the organizer.